Hi, I'm Jerry Ellis, host of Talking Apes, and this is a spoiler alert. You won't get many of those on Talking Apes, but you're about to hear one of four podcasts in our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day celebration. As we take a deep dive into the making of Chimp Empire, the new Netflix nature docuseries, we will go behind the scenes with the folks that made it. So before listening much further, I really encourage you to watch this extraordinary four-part series, Chimp Empire, and then come back to our exclusive Talking Apes World Chimpanzee Day event, where we'll dig into the details of the characters and the events creating this amazing series. Okay, there's your spoiler alert. You've been warned.
Who are we? How did we become the way we are? As humans, we spend our lives trying to understand ourselves. But sometimes it feels we're too close to see clearly. That's why we love stories from other worlds. In the world of chimpanzees, so similar to ours in some ways, but so different in others. Tells us stories more revealing than you can imagine. Stories all the more powerful because they are real.
Welcome to our exclusive Talking Apes Behind the Scenes podcast series on the making of Chimp Empire, the extraordinary Netflix four-part docuseries unlike any nature film you have ever seen. This episode features our conversation with Chimp Empire's director of photography and award-winning cameraman, Ben Saad. Ben has had a rich and varied filmmaking career, including works on Jago, A Life Underwater, Attenborough's Wonder of Eggs, and of course, previous chimp work on Rise of the Warrior Apes. In the Chimp Empire, his talent and experience behind the lens helped create a visual feast for all of us to experience what it's like to live literally in amongst the chimps of Ngogo. Chimp Empire captures in astonishing film detail the complex lives of the largest wild chimpanzee group known, over 200 chimps living in the secluded Ngogo rainforest of Uganda's Kibale National Park. Stunningly filmed and thoughtfully written, and narrated by Academy Award-winning actor Mahershala Ali, the story centers around alpha male named Jackson and the chimp community of Ngogo's central group. Chimp Empire moves between moments of great tenderness and intimacy of family life to the violent brutality of all-out war. It's a story of individuals, too, each one unique in character, each with their own ambition, hopes, and fears, of friendships forged and of loyalties lost, of societal hierarchies and benefits and struggles that come together with such an intelligent and emotional ape like us. And now my conversation with Ben Saad. Hi, Ben, and welcome to Talking Apes. It's really, I'm super excited to have you here, both as a cameraman and a photographer, filmmaker, but also to talk about Chimp Empire and the work that you have done on that. So welcome to Talking Apes.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to start thinking again about being with the chimps and sort of reliving some of those memories that we've had over the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, it's fun to have you on because you've just come back from filming on another ape film, and maybe we can talk about that. I don't know how top secret that is at this point, but we'll take a look at that down the line. So to get everybody out there who's listening on the same page, you are a natural history filmmaker, cameraman, but on Chimp Empire, you also played the role of, in what in traditional filmmaking would be thought of as a director of photography or a DP. We shorten it to. But in talking earlier, you were saying how that plays a slightly different role. So maybe you could explain what those two things are, and then let's talk about how that's different in Chimp Empire.
So I guess traditionally when you're filming wildlife or natural history, you'd be a cameraman, and then you'd sort of have the story that the program needs, and you'd go out and film it and sort of collect a series of shots that help tell the story that's almost been predefined in an office somewhere. Whereas with Chimps and with Chimp Empire in particular, there wasn't a script going into it. So I got involved much earlier than I normally would in helping decide on the cameras and the different lenses and tripods and sort of going through that whole setup in a way that we could capture anything that happened, as opposed to having a predefined goal for what we wanted to achieve. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, it makes total sense. And the reason I ask that is because this idea of a predefined story that you're going to tell in sort of traditional natural history filmmaking, you do decide. I know you've worked on other films. You've worked, on things that David Attenborough has done and some other projects. They are very different than what you see here. And I know from my own experience in working and filming apes that the thing that we like to illustrate is how much they are like us, but at the same time, that's what makes it a little bit chaotic. And that's why this film is so interesting, because you guys were almost like embedded journalists in it. And as such, you don't get to define kind of what was going on. So that's why I was really curious in your role. Walk me through some of those early conversations and what you guys were trying to do in this series of Chimp Empire versus the Warrior series, which was 5-6 years earlier.
Okay. So I spoke to James actually in a car park somewhere just after the first lockdown. We sort of met up and stayed 2 meters apart, and he was like, I've got this idea for a show and Netflix is interested, and it's not almost been green lit. And would you like to work on it? And I was like, definitely, that sounds great. And ever since working on Warrior Apes, we filmed it in 2015. Ever since then, I've wanted to go back. And I guess because with that project, I was filming the scientists and the interviews that sort of helped tell the story of this group of chimpanzees. And I actually only did a few days of filming with the chimps themselves. So I was hooked on it already after just a few days of filming them. And I guess the experience of working on Warrior Apes helped sort of define the cameras and the lenses and the approach that we took to filming for Chimp Empire.
I'm curious about that because the technology, and I not to get too technical or geeky on everyone, but the technology has definitely evolved and very quickly in the last decade. And since you did some of the work on Warriors, I'm curious about the decisions that were made in the cameras and the technology that allowed you to film what you did in Chimp Empire. Because when you watch Chimp Empire, that very first episode, it's broken into four. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's broken into four parts on Netflix. And that opening scene, it's very different than any natural history film in that the first 8 cuts in that film are super tight. Their eyes and hands and tight faces. It establishes right out of the gate that what we're about to see is different than most natural history films. It doesn't start with this master shot that's, this giant landscape and, sort of these animals running across the landscape or, something like that. Maybe you could describe a little bit about where you were filming, what that location is like, and then how you had to make decisions about how you were going to film this.
Okay, so yeah, Ngogo is a sort of, I think it's a dry tropical forest, but it still rains a lot. I call it dry, it's not. Especially in the rainy season, it's incredibly wet. It's very hilly. The forest is quite thick, especially there's areas that are secondary forest, and so you've got the lower canopy. And sort of when you're moving through it, following the chimps, a lot of it is just trying to stop you moving all the time. So if you've got a big, heavy camera, a big tripod, it just makes everything really hard. Like there's vines grabbing onto you and you're just trying to keep up, let alone like trying to get in front of the chimps to sort of get shots of them coming towards you. And then it's also really dark. There's a sort of thick canopy over the whole forest. So it's when they're on the ground, it's quite dark. And then they go up into the trees and then you've got the white sky behind them. And then there is this dark black fur. So as soon as they're against that, you can't really see them. So I guess that defined the cameras. I mean, it's something that was quite sensitive to light for filming on the forest floor, but then also something with great dynamic range. So that when they're backlit and there's all the leaves catch the light and get sort of overexposed. So yeah, something with good light sensitivity, great dynamic range, so you can see the highlights and the shadows at the same time. And on those close-up details that you mentioned, having the detail in the fur so you can sort of see all the different hairs without lots of noise and things being introduced into the image. And then it had to be light enough to, you know, deal with all the forest vines that are stopping you running through the forest after the chimps. And then not use too many batteries because they're heavy. And basically we worked in sort of teams of two. So I worked with a field assistant every day who would help me IDing the chimps and sort of working out where they're going, what they're doing. But then he would also put my tripod in place for me and then I'd put my camera onto the tripod. So we're carrying it, that whole setup between the two of us. So it had to be lightweight as well. And then it had to conform to the standards that Netflix set. So they've got a whole list of cameras that you have to choose from. So it had to come from that list as well. And then there's so many lenses and like you say, technology's moved on so far in the last 10 years. So there's just so many different options that we could have gone with. So after that initial meeting with James in the car park, I sort of went off and looked at all the options. And then it was just after the first lockdown. So it was actually really hard to get hold of some of the cameras, especially newly released ones. There were all the backlogs of orders and will it get delivered in time? We could use this camera, but oh no, that's like, we can't get that till the middle of next year. We want to start filming before then. So it was quite a complex task. And I actually ended up with a huge spreadsheet of like different lenses, focal lengths, apertures, f-stops, t-stops, then their weight, and then like a whole list of different tripods and tripod heads and everything. And then we ended up with a setup that sort of gave us, without compromising image quality, but gave us something that was maneuverable enough to sort of follow the action as it happened.
I mean, when you watch the films, that is the one thing that struck me immediately is it does have this embeddedness to it. At times it feels like you're only inches away from some of these chimps. I assume that was the thought behind that was you wanted to tell the story of them as individuals. That wasn't collectively we're talking about chimps. This isn't a natural history film in which we're just going to talk about the overall sort of zoology of a chimpanzee. This is a very personal look. In fact, it's interesting because in the opening narration to the entire film, I mean, I said there were eight cuts, I think, that were very tight, but it also goes, the narration goes along. Who are we? How do we become the way we are? As humans, we spend our time trying to understand ourselves. And it seems like the filming, it emphasizes that because of this tightness. We never really get to see a huge, other than some drone aerials, we never really get to see the expanse of the forest. We're always right there where the chimps are in the middle of their action. And I know from a filmmaking standpoint, in those kinds of forests, you need to be almost on top of the chimps to do that.
Yeah. So generally you the sort of rule is you have to be 7 meters away. And then I remember we were discussing it with James early on. He's like, you have to be 7 meters away because you, to keep, obviously keep the chimps safe from any sort of human diseases and things. And so that they can behave naturally without impacting on them. But then if you're further than 7 meters away, you can't see them. So that's, and then you're just operating through like really small windows. Maybe you can see them from a small little window, but if you zoom out any further, you just get lots of ugly leaves around them and then they sort of just vanish into the forest. But when there are wide shots with the chimps, it is a beautiful forest as well. But yeah, I guess it's those small windows you're filming through that kind of force you to be closer and closer with the lenses, just so you can, and their faces and like the sort of subtle differences in the characters. If you're on a wider shot, you can't really, I spent so long with them now that I can look at them and be like, okay, that's that, that's Christine, that's Gus, that's Jackson. But I guess as a viewer, do you need that closeness to sort of help you identify the different characters as well? Or is it kind of, you just get used to it quite quickly? You sort of recognize them?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. And that almost goes back to that conversation maybe you had in the parking lot with James. And we're talking about James Reed, the director. Was the look of the two films, the Warrior film versus Chimp Empire, is very different. And the way the stories are told is different. The first one is more a reflection by all these scientists, and the look of the film is different because I assume that a lot of that filming anyway was you got from the scientists. They had filmed it over the years.
Yeah, so the majority of Warrior Apes is filmed by David Watts, who has been researching the chimps and Ngogo for sort of 30 years. And a lot of it's sort of on a handy cam, handheld. A lot of it's for research purposes. So he's just following it so he can analyze it afterwards. So we kind of took that approach because the behaviors that he managed to capture were like unlike anything that you'd get from a sort of traditional long lens natural history setup. Just the fact that he could be there with them for longer and yeah, it just meant that he got incredible behaviors and the whole history of this is Ngogo chimpanzee society is sort of laid out in that film over 30 years, the sort of changes in power, who's alpha and the different ways that they've formed coalitions and taken over and become the alpha. So we kind of took a lot of what he did and tried to sort of replicate that, but with better cameras and better lenses but still be able to capture that level of detail and intimacy that you get from that approach.
So I guess this almost goes back to that original question about being a director of photography and you're standing there. Was it your intent and James' intent to keep this as tight as it was and keep it as, you know, in the film, we see the names of each of the chimps come up. There's this, and I know from working around chimps, it takes a little bit of time to be able to start recognizing individuals, surprisingly quicker than most people might assume because they do all look different. But that was something you had to, if you were going to make a film that involved individuals, it was something that you had to fairly quickly get on board with. You had to start recognizing individuals because you couldn't rely, I would assume, on whoever the researcher or the person working with you going, you know, that's Gus over there or that's Nadine over there. And you'd be whipping the camera all over the place. Okay, I got to focus on Gus today. or what? Explain how your approach to telling a story about individuals challenged you as a cameraman.
I guess the first couple of shoots, because then it's, you know, we filmed for about a year and a half in total, sort of on and off. We weren't there continuously, but I guess the first shoot, you don't know who's going to be a character. Like it could be something that happens a year later, and suddenly, you know, this character that wasn't even going to be interesting. Suddenly they're like, wow, that's like a really important character. I guess Pork Pie could be a good example of that. We filmed him a lot, partly because he was always round. And then the field assistants we worked with, they had a bit of a saying that if you're going on a patrol and you're following Pork Pie, you're going to lose the group, because he was always at the back. He was a bit slower, and then you'd be like, oh, we're keeping up, like running through with this patrol, and then you realize you're just following Pork Pie and it's just the three of you. But then obviously what happened to him at the end of episode one, suddenly he's a very important character. So we had such a broad approach on the first shoot, and also the excitement of spending time with chimps. You're just like, oh my gosh, I can see a chimp and it's in a nice area, the light's good, film them. And then hope they do something cool or interesting. And then by the last shoot, it was like, okay, this is, maybe you've got a shot of Jackson, say, and you're like, wow, this is amazing behavior. But then it's like, oh, he's with the wrong other individual. So suddenly that's like not an important storyline. So our approach changed over the time we were filming, from that really broad approach to sort of much more focused. We sort of knew more who our characters were, who the main characters were. So you could, yeah, follow Gus for a day, or follow Christine for a day, or follow Jackson for a day. And I guess we had hopes at the beginning of like and an idea of what the story might be. So Jackson as the alpha, he's always going to be an interesting character, but we had absolutely no idea how that story was going to play out. And then even, and just learning them, like I say, it's like that first sheet, you're just like, yes, it's a chimp, I'm going to film it because it looks nice. And then you start sort of picking up on the different characters. So some of them have got like sort of gray backs. So it's like, say, Jackson's got sort of grey back and legs, and then Miles has got grey trousers. So that they were some of the first two that I could recognise quite quickly, just through that. Until like a week in, I realised there's actually a couple of females that also have grey backs and trousers. And I was like, oh, look, it's Jackson. And Davis, my field assistant, would be like, no, that's Bartley, and that's a female. So it takes a while to sort of learn the faces. But by the end of it, I felt like pretty confident with most, particularly the central group where I spent most of my time filming. Pretty good. Even their different gates and stuff, you could sort of see them move through a patch and be like, okay, that's Peterson or that's Miles. Or so yeah, it's quite a quick or a steep learning curve to sort of get all those names in. But once they're there, they do stick with you, and it seems crazy that you just could never tell them apart.
We're going to take a short break in my conversation with cameraman and director of photography, Ben Sad. We're so delighted to bring this behind-the-scenes perspective on Chimp Empire to you from those people on the ground, like Ben, who were embedded in the world of the Ngogo chimps. When we come back after the break, I want to explore with Ben the characters and the sub-storylines in Chimp Empire and how they revealed themselves and finally came together in the field, behind the camera, and ultimately in what we experience on the screen. But before we do that, let's check in with assistant producer Demel Zaban and find out what you have been asking about this exclusive look behind the scenes, the making of the Chimp Empire. Hi, Demelza.
So, for a bit of fun this week, I asked our listeners who their favourite Chimp Empire characters were. Someone who actually works at the Ngogo Chimps project wrote in, sorry I don't have the name of that person to read out, but thank you for supporting us and writing in, whoever you are. They said, this is a tough decision. If we're only allowed to pick one, I'd go with Garbo. So Garbo, I believe, is that lovely, wrinkly, wise-looking old lady chimp from the Western Troop. She is amazing. Gibbon Fan said, Jackson, my beloved. And Colleen Pritchett Wiggins said, all of them. Who's your favourite, Jerry?
That's a tough one. There's a few for different reasons, but let's start with Christine. I love watching experienced chimp moms in the forest with their little ones, especially those under a year or so old. The tenderness and the seemingly effortless full-on attention their moms give them and the caring, it's amazing. And you, your favorite?
I have to say, I am a Gus girl myself. I always seem to have a soft spot for underdogs or loners, and it just breaks my heart with his little melancholy face and those dimpled cheeks. Anyway, I've read that he's doing really well now, so that's good news. Are there any other Gus girls out there, or boys? Let me know, or just get in touch about anything else you'd like to talk about. We are on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram. Search for Talking Apes or our other project, Apes Like Us. You can contact us through both. Back to Jerry with more of your questions for James Reed.
Thanks, Demelza. This is a question from Karen. She wrote in asking, how are the chimpanzees given names? Does the government of Uganda name each individual so that the researchers and the documentary filmmakers can share them? James?
So the chimps are named by the Ngogo scientists. And it began with John and David when it was just them. Once they sort of they were getting to know the chimps, they decided to give them names after jazz musicians initially, and then they sort of ran out of famous jazz musician names. They moved on to Hollywood stars, and then it just became a lot more random, and people just named them after people they knew or whatever. So it's all the naming is done by the Ngogo Chimpanzee Project.
That explains where Miles gets his name. Well, now back to my conversation with cameraman Ben Sad. As you said in the beginning, you didn't have a clear storyline. You sort of knew this group of chimps from the previous film. At what point in the filming do you start saying, I think we have a storyline here, I think we have a storyline there, and we need to focus more time on these individuals or these individuals? How did that, walk me through that, sort of how you wove that together? Because
It's a tricky one. It was kind of, James, we were just given a lot of freedom in the field to sort of film what we felt was interesting, as well as having that the sort of overarching ideas of like, these are the things that could happen. There was a lot of freedom in what we could film, particularly early on. And then as you start watching back, and I guess early on, because you don't know the individuals as well as you do towards the end. So there kind of almost has to be that freedom. And then as you start looking back at it and learning, and you look back. So like there's a scene quite early on with Abrams and Gus grooming. And that was in the first like maybe 10 days of filming. And I never saw them really again together like that in that way. And when you're filming at the time, you don't know that that's an important story point. So you just have to sort of cover scenes as they happen. And then hope you get, well, I don't know. I've got a bit lost in what I'm saying there.
I guess I'm almost too close to the process, having gone through it so many times myself. But I'm envisioning all of this film, and now you're sitting down. How many times during this process did you have to just sit down and sort through what you have and start? It's, you know, you're not waiting to the end to do your post-production. You're almost doing post-production throughout and editing throughout to sort of say, wait, here's a storyline developing. Here's a storyline developing. How much of that was going on in trying to create this?
So there was a lot. So in the field, when we got back, we sort of offload the footage, and then we'd go through it. And on days off and things, we would go through what we'd been filming. And then you sort of label all the characters and the behaviors. Which it shows in the film as well. It's not just the faces that are accurate to the chimpanzees. There's no mixing between chimpanzees. And it's even things like it's their fingers and the detail shots that it's like, those are those chimpanzees' hands, because you wouldn't do that in real life. You wouldn't be like, maybe you could get some stunt hands in for a shot. But and I think that just, it all like is what makes it quite a special program to me. It's how real it is to what happened. And a lot of the behaviors only happened once, and that's it. And you've got to cover things in a way that you can tell a story from that one scene as it's happened. And then there's a lot of those little scenes that obviously won't be used. But when I watch it now, I'm like, oh yeah, that was a really key moment. And I kind of almost remember the little moments, like I mentioned Abrams and Gus. I remember really clearly filming it. And then when you look back in the brushes like a year later, or you watch a rough cut, and you're like, oh yeah, that happened on that day, and this is where it was. So it's just such a unique group of chimpanzees to work with, and such a different approach that I've never come across in natural history filmmaking. Where it's that freedom to make choices as a camera operator of like what you find interesting, what the story is, but then how invested in those characters you become as well.
There are two parts to what you just said that are interesting to me. I mean, to have the freedom as a cameraman to be able to make, you were almost like a field editor, I would guess. I mean, you're making editorial choices out there, because I'm assuming, you know, James isn't standing over your shoulder going, no, film that. He may not even be out there half the time. I don't know. But and especially when you're running through the forest and then have to, all of a sudden the chimps come to a halt or climb trees and you have to start making decisions who you're going to follow, which, you know, you have to almost be building the story, I would think, in your head over the course of that year and a half, so that you know where to go as well. And I guess coordinate, you said there was a second team and there were other people who were doing some filming as well. So you've got to communicate all that.
Yeah. So we had two teams, one in the Western group and one in the Central group. And then within those teams, we had sort of two operators and two assistants. So it'd be generally four of us. But yeah, like you say, you have to make loads of decisions on a day-to-day basis of which chimp you follow, or like which group of chimps, or if it's a group, like what's the interest in that scene. So there's shots, you know, maybe Christine at the edge of the group, like you could have been focused on the group, but instead you're like, okay, it's important that Christine is outside this group. So yeah, you are making a lot of choices. And particularly what I found in the central group, because it's such a different group structure between the two groups. Like the Western group were much more so cohesive. So if you found the group, you'd find most of your characters. Whereas in the central group, there's a much more sort of fizz and fusion dynamic. So depending on a day, you'd have a different group of chimpanzees with you. So maybe you'd have Jackson and Miles and then Gus loitering on the outside, or you'd just have Gus and you'd be like, okay, I'll follow Gus for a day and just watch him eating fruit and sort of wandering around the forest by himself. Or again, you have that moment with Gus and Abrams and it's suddenly that's an important thing, but it just sort of, yeah, you're just making so many choices on the field, on the ground, and then you're filming a lot. And then all credit to the sort of logging process and then the editors and the editing process. They had to sift through a lot of storylines that when you're there, you're like, oh my gosh, this is the most amazing thing. This is so interesting. And then a year later, it's just like, well, that probably wasn't actually that interesting or useful.
How much did your field assistants, or the guys who were there all the time, the trackers and researchers and stuff, I mean, I would assume that they were critical to sort of being right there over your shoulder and sort of saying, this is a behavior you're not going to see, or I think they're about to do this or about to do that. And it's, and especially with it, I know with chimps, because they are such individuals, some will do things that like humans, some will do things that others won't do. And at the same time, you get two or three individuals coming together, there may be something that they will do that you wouldn't see other chimps do, or they wouldn't do on their own. And I guess that must have been guided by the researchers, a lot of it.
Yeah. So a lot of it was through the field assistants, actually. So we had Chris and Davis, who are our two main field assistants, and they were basically camera assistants and field guides all at the same time. And they've spent a lot of time with the chimps. I think they've both more than 5 years each, I think, have been out there with that, with the Ngogo chimps. So they know them all really well. And they were absolutely, totally essential to the production and sort of how it came together. And actually, originally, we were going to go out more with a sort of natural history way of doing things where a cameraman and their assistant would go into the field and have help from the field assistants. But we quickly realized that because Chris and Davis were so good at what they did and like understood the filming process, that we could use them as camera assistants. And then that opened up a second channel in each group. So that our camera assistants suddenly became second shooters or getting second angles on things or more gimbal shots, which sort of frees you up to film twice as much behavior. or if the chimps split, you can follow different groups or different individuals on the same day.
Are they Ugandans?
They are, yeah. They're Ugandan guys. And Diana as well is also a field assistant, and she is absolutely fantastic with the chimps. And we over the course of our time there, we would sort of train them all up in operating themselves. So I think all of them have got shots that they got while we couldn't be there that are in the program. And some of it's like some of the key moments in the series were filmed by them because they could be there longer than us. And Diana in particular has got a lot of shots in the program. Partly because she just knows the chimps so well that she can get ahead and have them coming towards her really easily. They actually transformed the way we worked and I think the whole program.
So did they have knowledge, filmmaking knowledge before you guys got there, or was that a training process that you had to go through with them?
So they all had a little bit. So Diana had done a course, a filmmaking course before, and then they'd worked with film crews before. But I felt like our approach was more, it was a very inclusive approach that we went for. And instead of having like a viewfinder, we had monitors on the cameras so they could actually see what we were filming. So after a couple of months with Davis, because I worked so closely with him, he could see what I was filming. And then he could sort of walk around to the other side and see if it was a better angle. And he'd be like, yeah, no, you should come over here because this is a better angle for what you want. Like you can, because you're, like I said, you're working with those tiny windows. And he's like, no, this one's better. Like you've got a better view from here. And then after if the chimps had gone up a tree, they'd be feeding for like maybe an hour. We used to just sort of watch back what we'd filmed in the morning, and just sort of sit there and have a little cup of coffee or something from a thermos and just look at what we'd shot in the morning. And then we'd sort of start, you know, being like, okay, this is framed like this because of this, and sort of from all the basics of like, you know, how you frame a shot, the rule of thirds. And then panning and then getting him actually using the camera and all the settings and ISO, aperture, ND, teleconverters, all of it. So we sort of, over the course there, we sort of, yeah, trained them up in camera operating, essentially.
That's a really interesting aspect, I guess, to this whole thing to me, because as somebody who spent a lot of time in the field, for much of the last, let's say, 50 years of natural history filming, it has been basically, you know, Australian, American, British, whatever, you know, white males going into the field and doing this filming. And as you just said, it's, you know, you can't necessarily be there every minute of the time. I mean, we sort of parachute in, and even if we get to parachute in for a long time, we get, you know, it's still only months or maybe, you know, a year or two. But you've got these guys who are walking out there. They're with the chimps every single day or almost every single day for years. And they're seeing things that we could never see. And the idea of them being proficient enough at being cameramen to create, you know, create imagery that, like you said, some of it helped really make the film. It seems like we need to spend, and made it, we're deviating off into some philosophy here, but it just feels like we need to spend a little more time being mentors and investing in these, you know, local folks who could be so critical to creating natural history films that have the look and feel of chimp empire.
And I guess that sort of idea, that idea sort of comes down from the top. Like that's sort of James's approach to a lot of things, and it's getting, and I guess that's into the sort of handheld shots that we got as well. It's the immediacy of the stories. And it's that openness to try something different. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But like, you don't know it doesn't work until you try. So yeah, we shot a lot of it handheld because that's the only way you could get there in time. If you get the camera on a tripod, you've missed that behavior or that moment. And that's the same with having the field assistants there the whole time. It's like they can get stories and moments that we can't get. That I'm going to be out of a job soon because they're better than me.
I think there's two roles. I think one is you become more critical because you become the voice of translating this for the market that is the larger market that is viewing this on Netflix, which is, you know, basically a Western or Northern Hemisphere market. And they become valuable in the long run in as the market in Africa grows, that they can do films from an African perspective that we couldn't, but yet we can help guide it to that production level that makes it valuable to a Netflix or some other, you know, distributor. I mean, there is that jump of, which is a question, I guess, and I'm not sure where you are in prepared to answer it, but Netflix has expectation of this. If, you know, when James said that Netflix had given a green light to this and they're going to put money into this thing to have it done, they have an expectation of what it's going to look like. And, you know, coming off of him producing, you know, and directing My Octopus Teacher and it winning all these awards, there's a certain expectation and a pressure. And I mean, did you guys feel that in the field that, you know, we have to make something that looks and feels different based on, you know, these expectations?
Yeah, I guess there was a little bit of pressure, particularly early on. But I think it's sort of a credit to James as a director is that freedom that I spoke about earlier. And he was like, so as one of our junior camera operators was doing a lot of gimbal stuff. And he was like, you know, if you don't get anything for a couple of weeks, it doesn't matter. And it's that confidence and freedom in like what he's doing, what he wants to make and how he wants it to look, that it's like, we've got time to experiment a little bit and to get it right in the end. And it doesn't matter if you miss 2 weeks of filming, as long as it works in the end. And I think it does. There's some absolutely fantastic shots in there from that approach. So it took the pressure off a lot having James as the director, because he just gave us a lot of freedom. And that I think shows as well, because if you're happy and it's a working environment, and if you're happy and free being creative and sort of following up on things that you think are interesting or stories that you think could be really good, it makes you want to be there more and give more to the production, like work harder. And then as the stories start developing, you're like, okay, I know I want to come back and I want to come back and I want to come back, because these characters are so engaging and amazing. So you go away for a couple of months and you're like, yeah, I can't wait to get back and see how Christine's infant has grown, how it's changed, what she's doing next, what's happening. Like, has Gus got any friends yet? There's just so many sort of subtle bits of behavior that are so fascinating. You want to see if they've changed or what's happened in that window that you haven't been there.
Well, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, why do another chimp film? And, you know, you'd worked on Warriors, but as you said, you didn't actually get to film quite as much of the chimps themselves. But was there something in that first film in Warrior Apes that you saw in chimps, you know, that said, I really want to film these guys? There's something about them that just makes them interesting characters through the lens.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, just having, yeah, it's just like, I don't know, a little taste of something that you have over a few, you know, a week or whatever I spent filming on Warrior Apes. Oh yeah, and I just wanted more immediately.
You were only there a week.
No, we were there 6 weeks, I think the whole shoot was, but I spent maybe 5 days in the field filming the chimps, and a lot of the rest of the time it's sort of filming the scientists and the interviews and the sort of the scenics and the GVs. I don't know, there's just something about them that like would keep you coming back again and again and again. And then also I've always, I'm a cameraman, and I love like beautiful imagery as well. And I felt like from Warrior Apes, with that approach, the stories are amazing, but I just felt like, oh, we can do better image wise. So the story is incredible, but it always felt not quite right. I was like, we can do better. And I think we have. I hope we have.
I'll tell you from my perspective, Chimp Empire is the first film about apes, any of the apes that I have seen that I went, damn, I wish I would have been there filming. They're just beautiful images. And I congratulate you on what you guys did. It really holds together, I think, cohesively, which is really interesting that you had this many people with cameras in their hands, and yet the imagery looks as though it was shot by one person. It has a real sense of continuity, and the imagery is, there's a beauty to it that you don't see often in natural history filming.
That's very, very kind of you. Thank you.
No, I applaud what you did there. And maybe that's because I have sat there trying to do that, and I appreciate how hard it is to do what you did. And as you know, working in those forests, that intimacy of, and it's going to sound strange because it's not just being close, but seeing, as you mentioned earlier, the texture in their hair and their face and the light in their eyes, all of that creates an intimacy in this film that again, you don't see in a lot of natural history films. I think to the casual observer, it might not seem like a whole lot, but it almost feels as though these were characters and you hired them all and you were able to say on a set, we're going to light it like this. We're going to have some big fill from behind and we're going to light you from down here and to make everybody look, beautiful. And you guys, it's brilliant.
Thank you. And like the stories that happened in the time we were there is absolutely, like I say, we didn't know what we were filming when we started, but we had, a sort of wish list of like, these things could happen. And then they all happened and more. And it is sort of absolutely, yeah, it's crazy, basically, like how much action happened in the time period that we were there. I think we must have got lucky.
On another podcast in this series of behind the scenes of Chimp Empire, we have John Matami. Professor John Matami is going to be on. I know he was a consultant on some of this stuff. And how much did that play, having somebody like that who's been there for 25 years and knowing some of the storylines of these characters already, how much did that play in being able to say early on, these are possible storylines that we want to follow? Did that help, or did you just really have to wing it once you were in the field?
Well, I know James spent a lot more time talking to John before shooting than I did, but I spent quite a lot of time in the field with John as well. And that's an amazing experience to spend so much time with someone that has dedicated their lives to this group of chimpanzees and knows them all so well. And they're not just the individuals there, but their backstory and their history and who their mum was and who their dad was, and has all the, access to all the sort of paternity data. So you can be like, okay, that's their dad, but obviously they don't know it's their dad. So it totally changes sort of how you look at the chimpanzees and how you are around them, just because he's that wealth of experience and having been able to draw on that as you're filming and as you're making those choices that we spoke about earlier is absolutely, yeah, critical to what we were doing and how those stories have been told.
What is a chimpanzee to you?
I'm not sure, to be honest. They're just incredibly special animals, and I think what makes them so unique is that individuality, which we've kind of touched on already, I suppose. But, they're all individuals, and it's such a privilege to be able to spend so much time with them and filming them that, yeah, it's, and then like knowing them as individuals, almost like, you know, I spent more time with them than I did with some people over that year and a half. And you can, knowing that, I don't know, say Miles is at the front of the group and, you know, like he doesn't want to be filmed as much. So he'll like turn off and go through the forest just to make your life a bit more difficult. So it's how they are, because generally they totally ignore people. Like they're so well habituated to our presence and we keep that distance so that they can behave naturally. But every now and then they sort of clock that you're there and you're like, okay, I'm going to make life a little bit more difficult for you. And I'm going to go through this thick patch in the bottom of the valley and you guys could have to walk the long way around. So yeah, it's their personalities and their sort of individual nature, I suppose, which is what is so amazing. And I think will keep me going back to film them again and again, if I get the opportunities, which I hope I do.
Yeah, that was actually my next question was, would you, if somebody said, sign me up, I'll go back, would you go back again?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That sort of answers it. Yeah, you kind of get hooked on a species like that. And it's almost hard to, you sort of find yourself going, God, I got to get back there somehow.
Yeah, because it's a species and it's those individual characters. And you're just like, I want to know what's happened. I want to know what they're doing now. I want to know what's happened since we finished filming. Like, how's it changed? And yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about when, not just when you first got there, but in general, do you think over that time that the chimps, they reacted differently to you and the crew because they were so familiar with the people, the assistants, field assistants and the other researchers that had been there and were there with you. Like obviously if you'd gone in on your own, you wouldn't know the individuals and you wouldn't know what's going on and things that, but were they habituated enough that they were just kind of like, okay, fine, there's a couple more people here and they just did their own thing? Or was it because there were these familiar faces to them that they had known for years as well?
Yeah, they're incredibly well habituated to humans. So they do, they'll clock you when you arrive because, you know, they're chimps and that's what they do. So they'll notice when you get there, but then they just sort of generally just carry on as if you're not there. And some of them are so well habituated that, you know, if you're in the path and they want to go down it, they'll just walk past you. So you've got to be 7 meters away, but obviously the chimp doesn't know where the 7 meter line is. And they don't even look at you. They'll just like walk straight past, not even a glance. So it's amazing. And that's from the hard work of the field assistants and the scientists that have been there before us, from like a wild group of chimpanzees that you couldn't follow at all, to being able to spend that much time and in that sort of proximity to them. It's an amazing amount of time and effort that's gone into getting the chimps that used to people and our presence that we could spend that much time with them. So yeah, John and David and all the scientists that have sort of been there for 30 years, it's amazing what they've done.
From a filming standpoint, do you think that gave you the ability to film the chimps as though you weren't there? We go back to that being an embedded journalist. So you're not seen as an outsider versus if you, you know, you come rambling in there as outsiders to film it, you've got all this equipment with you, you're reacting differently, you're interacting differently. And so their behaviors are not going to be the same. They're going to be keeping you at the periphery of their attention all the time. Where, you know, when you watch a lot of the finished product of Chimp Empire, it feels as though you are a mosquito getting to watch all this happen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's how it felt filming it as well. It was amazing how ambivalent, I guess, they were to our presence. They did just, they'd be like, okay, you're here. And then they'd just carry on as if we weren't there. And that access is what makes Chimp Empire what it is, I think. If they were there, like, you know, staring down the barrel of the lens all the time, you'd just be like, well, we can't use these shots because it's obvious that they're just checking out a camera or a camera person. So that access is, I guess, why you get that intimacy that you get through the series.
Did you have any of those moments with, especially with juveniles, because, you know, little ones don't know you and don't know people the same way that, you know, Gus or one of the older ones would know these researchers. So did you have those moments where the little ones would come over and just sort of like check you out and like, can I crawl up on that camera? Can I crawl up on that tripod?
They sort of generally, the little ones were more, they were quite far away, actually. They weren't that interested. They sort of look at us, but they would be like, okay, I'm going back to playing with my playmate, as opposed to trying to engage with us sort of physically, which is quite good.
Is there a storyline that you feel like you is sitting there that you really would love to go back and pursue? Is there something that happened that you just say, oh man, I'd love to continue filming down that channel, down that storyline?
Well, it's the two groups at Ngogo that make it so special as well, because it used to be one sort of huge, sort of the biggest group of chimpanzees sort of ever known, and it split into two. And then because the group was habituated, now you've got two habituated groups of chimpanzees, so you get to see how they interact with each other. Whereas if, say, you go up into the Northern Territory where there's another group of chimps, then you go with the Central chimps, the fact that you're there with them, it's probably the only time that you're impacting their behavior, because that Northern group isn't habituated to people. So they'll see a person and they'll be gone. So that's where it's so unique in Ngogo, is that being able to be there and interact, or not be there and watch two groups interact as if you're not there, is an incredible experience. And I think that is why I'd like to go back to Ngogo, because it's that uniqueness. And I don't know, it's just, I just want to know what happens. And the Western group has sort of been pushing into Central Territory, and, you know, the end of episode 4, that's a big change for the Central group. So it's, what's happened, who's in charge, who's still there. There's just so many changes and things that would be just great even just to go and catch up with them. And I don't know, when you go on those patrols as well, you just feel like part of the gang, and you're like running through the forest trying to keep up with these chimpanzees. And it's just like this, I don't know, it feels like you're on their team, and I want to see how my team's doing, basically, I think.
No, I understand that completely. A project that I worked on years ago, I keep referring to them as my baby elephants, and they were not mine. They don't belong to me. They've all gone back. They're orphans that have all gone back in the wild. But I always, I do wonder like where they all are and what they're doing. So I know you do get attached in that way, that you want to see where the story goes next. Who's grown up, interacting with whom, having babies, doing all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it sounds like you could...
There are weird moments as well when you're in filming and say the Westerners are patrolling into the Central Territory. And obviously the Central chimps don't know that the Westerners are coming, but you've got a radio and you do. And you're just... I just remember one time just sitting there with Carter and Evans, who... they're not named characters in the film, but they're just there like grooming each other and chilling out on a path. And then, so the whole forest is split up in a sort of grid structure for research purposes. So you kind of know where the Westerners are in the forest. You know, they're getting closer, and they're just sitting there grooming. And you're like, guys, they're coming. Like, it's time to wake up and like do something about this, get everyone else together. And then they just sort of stood up and like walked off towards a fig tree that was in fruit, and you're just like, no, that's the wrong way, guys, that's where the Westerners are. And luckily they displayed and made lots of noise, and the Westerners retreated back into their territory. But it's because, yeah, you spent so much time with them, you're like, no, these are my come on, guys, like, you're gonna get killed if you're not careful here. So it almost feels like you're cheating on them a bit, because you know something that they don't, and you want to help them out, but you've just got to watch what happen.
That was an interesting point, because you mentioned getting killed, and chimps do kill each other. Were you there during any of the killings, or any of the violent attacks?
I didn't witness any intergroup, like, well, I was there for an encounter, but not actually for a killing itself. I was there for the aftermath at the end of episode one.
Where are the emotions in that? Where are your emotions in that? I mean, when, like you said, these two are sitting here in the trail grooming and you know something that they don't know. And it's like, you'd like to be able to tell them. I mean, that's the other challenge, I guess, in getting to know a group of individuals so well that they do become your guys. You are running along the trail with them. You're your team. Where does that emotional layer fit in what you're trying to do and convey to people sitting in the middle of, you know, in the middle of the UK or the middle of the States and watching this? How do you convey that?
It's a tricky one. I guess without any spoilers as well, even trickier. Yeah, I guess filming what happens at the end of episode one. And I just remember, yeah, watching it and seeing, you know, wild animals reacting in such a sort of obviously distraught grief. Like, I don't know, it felt like you could just see the emotions in their faces, and it felt so obvious. And I guess it's that sort of visceral reaction to what happened. And at the time, I guess you spend a lot of time being like, okay, I've got to film it. This is what's happening. And you sort of hide behind that, the lens of your camera. And you're just like, okay, I've got to cover this as best as I can. And then you sort of process it afterwards. But that whole day was just a crazy day in the forest, and just witnessing wild animals experiencing grief and confusion. And I remember getting back to camp later and sort of hearing them in the forest, because we were camping right in the forest with them. So you could still hear them, and they were, I don't know, the noises that were happening in the forest, everything seemed different. And without massively anthropomorphizing the chimps, it just felt like the whole group had experienced something, was experiencing some grief and confusion and didn't know what had happened. And it wasn't until after we'd filmed it that it was like, oh my gosh, that was a crazy thing to see. And yeah, I don't know, it's still quite difficult to put into words.
Yeah, I can imagine that, because it is very different than when they're hunting. When they're hunting colobus or other monkeys, there's clearly a different feeling about it.
Yeah, like you watch them hunting, and it feels like a sort of necessary, not entirely necessary, but necessary part of their natural history and natural behavior. But then witnessing, you know, a dead chimpanzee is kind of, and it's a chimpanzee that you've got to know. You knew him by name, and like you knew his character. So it's a completely different experience to even, I don't know, filming a lion eating a wildebeest or a buffalo. Like, that feels like a natural behavior, whereas killing another chimpanzee just feels way too close to human. in a bleak kind of a way. Yeah.
And maybe that's what it is. Were there moments in either in the process of filming like that, or in looking back on it, that have made you think differently about humans? Let me rephrase that a little bit. Has it made you think different about humans? And the flip of that is, has it made you think differently about chimps? It's sort of two sides of the same coin, I guess.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because they are, I tell you what has changed actually, is since finished filming, I've got a daughter now. And that has totally changed the way, I sort of spend quite a lot of time just watching her and thinking, that's incredibly like watching Christine's infant at a similar sort of age, and the way they explore the world and look at things and find a bit of fruit and gum it a little bit and then chuck it away, or like a swinging on a tree branch, just sort of testing things out, learning how to use their hands, sort of. And I feel like that sort of life event for me has impacted how I look at chimps, particularly young chimps. and how close to small baby humans they are.
Is there anything else that has happened in that whole process that you wanted to share before we jump off? One last shot at it.
One last shot to make sense. No, the whole experience was very, very special. And like all the people I worked with, all the other camera operators, producers, directors, it just felt like a sort of a family that we were working with. And it's quite a small team, I guess, working on it. And it's just a very special experience that time with the chimps and all the people that sort of made it possible. Absolutely incredible. And I really hope that people enjoy the show. And yeah. And I'm looking forward to going back and picking up that 17 kilo bag and running around after some chimpanzees again.
Yeah, well, at least it isn't a 60 kilo bag, which it would have been a couple of decades ago. So by the time you go back, it'll be a 7 kilo bag. The cameras seem to be getting smaller and lighter and more efficient and better at dynamic range and all those kinds of things. So anyway, thank you so much for doing this. It's a brilliant piece of filming. Again, I applaud you and the team and everything that you put together on it. I wish there was a way to grab that series and make sure that, you know, every person on the planet saw it, because I think they would think differently about who we are and our role on the planet and how we connect to another species. So thank you for doing the work. It really was amazing. And fingers crossed you get to go back and do it again, because I look forward to seeing that next film.
Cool. So thank you so much for having me. It's nice to relive some of those memories as well.
All right. Cheers. Take care.
Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank Ben for sharing his wonderful behind-the-scenes view of what it was like to be a cameraman on Chimp Empire. You'll find links to Chimp Empire, including images and additional video from the film, on our website at talkingapes.org. You've been listening to Talking Apes, the podcast that gets to the heart of what's happening with and to apes like us. Our conversations are with folks from across this planet of apes, writers, researchers, conservationists, scientists, and even cameramen, all getting us closer to understanding who we are and why, because ensuring the survival of the other four great apes is the only way to ensure our own. I would like to thank our entire Talking Apes team for all the work they do in bringing you this podcast. And I would like to thank you, the donors and Patreon members who make Talking Apes successful through your generous support and the sharing of this podcast. If you appreciate what you're hearing on Talking Apes, consider supporting us. Please visit our website at talkingapes.org. Finally, I would also like to thank the dedicated folks on the front line of great ape survival. We hope through Talking Apes we're able to shine a light on the incredible selfless work that you do every day to ensure great apes, primates, and their forest homes like Ngogo survive and thrive into the future. I'm Jerry Ellis. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sharing with family and friends the Talking Apes podcast.